Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
It is the day after Christmas, and we are back with you, the Gas House Gang, right here on KMOX. I'm Matt Pauly, Mike Claiborne here as well. We've got you for the next hour. Glad to be able to do that with you, as we've got a lot to get to between now and 1 o'clock. Claibs, great to see you. Merry day after Christmas.
And it's a great day after Christmas. It's good to see you as well. I hope everything went well for you and yours.
It did. I've got the two young kids, so Christmas is always an adventure, but a good adventure.
It's always good.
Yeah.
What do you have any traditions family-wise that you'd like to maintain?
I mean, it's the basic stuff. It's going to church on Sunday night for Christmas Eve service. It's the pajamas that we get on Christmas Eve. We do Christmas presents on Christmas morning. So nothing. We always do cookies together, where my wife will make cookies and then we'll ice them and put stuff on them. So just good stuff. How about you? What does Christmas look like for you?
I have no traditions.
You got nothing?
I'll take the dog out for a walk. But I cook. I like cooking, so I have some buds come over. You have friends that maybe don't have family in St. Louis or whatever. Come to my house, and we will eat and drink and chop it up a little bit. So I did a little bit of that, watched a lot of football. Well, I didn't watch as much football because, and this is an issue we have to come to grips with. While the streaming services are very prominent in how we watch things, when you stream, you can't change the channel. Back and forth. So that becomes a little bit of a challenge for me. So they need to figure that out, or I'm going to stay on one channel and I'm going to miss out on something. So I ended up being stuck with the NBA yesterday, which put out some pretty good games, especially the last game.
That last game was remarkable.
It was. And, that's kind of what I do. You hang out with your kids for a little bit, and then you get tired of them, and then you move on to something else.
I feel bad for and I don't feel too terribly bad, but I do feel bad for the NBA because they used to own Christmas.
Yeah.
And then when the NFL decided, we're going to start playing on Christmas ourselves, the ratings for the NBA just absolutely tank. And part of it is those first two games yesterday for the NFL were on Netflix. Final game was on Amazon Prime. There's no recall button on that. You can't flip in between the football and the basketball. And Claibs, with all due respect to you, I think you were probably in the minority of people who decided to go ahead and just choose the NBA and not watch the NFL. It really hurts the NBA's business that they no longer own Christmas the way they previously did.
It has become a concern. But, here's the one X factor that the NFL doesn't have. They don't have Charles Barkley, Ernie Johnson, Shaq, and Kenny Smith between games and half times. And that's always amusing to me. It's the nature of the beast. That's the NFL and who they are. Now, I would think the NFL would probably say, man, I wish we could have had some more competitive games. But nobody knew Patrick Mahomes was going to get hurt. You thought Detroit and Minnesota were going to be better teams than what they are. But that's the nature of the beast as far as the game is concerned. But, overall, there was enough for everybody. It was enough sports to go around for everybody.
There was. You mentioned we weren't going to talk about this, but we're living in an age right now where I don't think there's a lot of legitimately funny stuff on TV. I rarely just sit back and laugh. There's a show or two that will give me a couple chuckles. I can't watch Inside the NBA without laughing, legit laughing every single time. I don't know if there is a funnier show on television than Inside the NBA.
I agree with you. And we see the other networks try and go that route, and you just want to just say, no, it's not working, man. They've cut out a niche unlike anything we've seen on TV. And I'm like you. I am hard to amuse when it comes to comedy on TV. I think the Andy Griffith show is funny. Okay. I haven't found that many shows since then that I find amusing to the point where I'm going to laugh out loud. And I'm like you on that front. So when the NBA on now ESPN comes on, you're right. There's something that they're going to amuse me with.
I don't know if you saw yesterday. I don't know if it was planned or not. It doesn't really matter because it was funny in the moment. Shaq runs through the video, and then they bring cones out. Yes. Around. I mean, it's stuff like that.
The police tape up the regulations. Well, how about the year when he fell over the Christmas tree? I mean, You know, Shaq, you know, I mean, he gets it as far as he knows he's a comedian in his own way. And most people buy into it. And, you know, he can make fun of himself and it works.
And every story I've ever heard about Shaq is he's a legit good guy. And I know there's been some, he went through a divorce and he's talked about the fact that he did not treat his former wife the way he would have liked to. But when you get to this version of Shaq 2.0, 3.0, whatever he is, man, every single time I hear a story about something that he's done or he's doing or personal interactions that somebody has that's not in the news, it's always positive. You talk about a guy who maybe through his life experiences has really learned what you got to do and gets it. I think it's Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, I agree with you. Maybe the most recognizable athlete that we have right now. You know, you say, okay, there's Michael Jordan. There's a handful of people that when you see them, you know exactly who they are. And he's one of them. And he's always, as you mentioned, he embraces it. And he's a fun-loving guy to be around and is always finding some way to make somebody else's day a little bit better.
Unfortunately, we're at a point right now where not a lot of – you talk about recognizable athletes, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Shaquille O'Neal, probably Charles Barkley. When you talk about active athletes – Mahomes is probably in there. LeBron is in there, but the active athletes aren't there. It's not like it used to be where if they're walking around, they're 100% going to get even Shohei Ohtani. Like internationally is, but if you took Shohei Ohtani and took him over to West County Center and walked through, I'm not sure how many people are realizing that's who he was.
I would agree with you, and you know, with social media as it is today, you would think it would be the opposite, where people will be more recognizable, but that doesn't seem to be the case, and I don't know why. I mean, maybe there's just too many athletes out there that people have found their niche to, but and maybe it has something to do with the fact that when you're out of the game, your greatness really starts to really grow even more.
Well, and like somebody like Manning, if you're going to pay him to be in a commercial, he'll be there immediately.
Yes.
Brady's all over the place because of TV. We mentioned two guys that are on Inside the NBA. It's those guys have figured out what it takes to remain in the spotlight post-playing career.
Yeah, and there's an art to it. It helps if you have a pretty clean slate as a player.
Yeah.
You know, it helps to be engaged before you get out of the game. Because there's some athletes who do commercials. And I ask myself the question, why? I give you a good example. Marshawn Lynch. He's doing some commercial I saw yesterday. And I'm like, who thought this was a good idea? You know, and then there are other ones that don't say a word in them. And you say, okay, I kind of get it. What's the one, the tennis player? I think he's with New Balance. Kid out of Florida. Anyway, doesn't say a word. But I get where they're going with the commercial. And then there are others that you say, who thought this was a good idea? But, you know, to each his own. I don't know who's the best pitch man or the person who sold the most of anything. I do. Mike Shannon. Mike Shannon sold more beer than anybody I ever met when it came to him being a broadcaster. But that's a different situation compared to athletes today who are known for something that they, maybe the Mannings, because they're in so many things that you would think maybe there would be that group of people that have supported a certain business. But overall, man, it's just so many of them out there. And I'll tell you the one, Blake was with the Clippers.
Oh, Blake Griffin?
Blake Griffin. I mean, this guy was irrelevant the last 5 years of his career, and all of a sudden he pops up and now he's some sort of media whiz. I'm sorry.
Well, it's kind of Baker Mayfield-ish now. He's everywhere, yet he's just a guy.
He's a Jag, is what we call him. He's just a guy.
You know, one of my favorite Shannon
stories.
Kind of
like you and me. We're local Jags.
Right.
We're local Jags.
One of my favorite Shannon stories of coming under that category is that when he would have somebody from like Cardinals Magazine on, he would then follow up a couple days later and ask, hey, how many subscriptions did we sell after that? He was always looking to help the organization and to sell whatever they were talking about. And not, I am in no way, shape, or form in any way comparing myself to Mike Shannon. But like if I have a Stan McNeil on, I'll always ask him a couple days later, hey, did we sell any Cardinal Magazine subscriptions out of that? And it's all because I knew that was something that Mike did.
And he was that way with tickets. Ask Joe Strong. he would always check in and see how we're doing on tickets. Do we need to pump this? Or we need to pump that. And we and you're part of this. We do it on the broadcast quite a bit. But you know that was something Mike was big on, making sure we sold tickets and let people know what was going on. So, you know, everybody has their own marketing method, and many of them work. The few that don't, they seem to stand out even more. But I think we're in a pretty good situation right now when it comes to options that we have from an entertainment standpoint.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. I want to get into a little bit of some of what Chaim Bloom had to say last week regarding the Cardinals and where they're going from a roster standpoint this upcoming season. And so much focus is on 2027, 2028, but they got to field a team and they don't want to be non-competitive. And I thought some of the things that he said in the last week or so were kind of interesting as we start to envision what the 2026 Cardinals roster could look like. Claibs and I will talk about that coming up in just a moment. You are locked into the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Back at it on KMOX, it is the Gas House Gang. Alongside of Mike Claiborne, I'm Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us. Of course, you can also hear Claibs and myself with the Countdown to Opening Day show. That's going to be coming up again on Tuesday next week. We also have a replay of this week's show coming up tonight. So if you enjoy listening to Claibs, you got lots of opportunities here on KMOX. Claibs, I want to get into a little... I always kind of pause when I go down this this line of thought because I'm fully understanding that the Cardinals' goals right now, they are focusing on long-term more than short-term, but I also like to say they want to be competitive. They don't want to be a bad team this upcoming season. So at the times when we talk to Chaim Bloom and he does talk about the 2026 Cardinals, I find it to be interesting because I still don't totally know what it's going to look like this upcoming season. And last week after they pulled off the Wilson Contreras trade, Chaim did speak with the media, and he made it clear that they actually would still be in the market for another starting pitcher, maybe a veteran starting pitcher. I don't know how that would all add up because already it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of competition for some of those back-of-the-rotation guys. But also looking to add a right-handed bat, and that becomes more important with Wilson Contreras walking out the door. So it was mentioned that you know they've saved money with Contreras going away and with Gray going away, that they fully intend to reinvest some of that money back into the 2026 roster. So this is not something where they're not going to add at all for this upcoming season.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you on that. And I was a little surprised, and I don't know the dynamics of it. I thought Pete Fairbanks would have been a perfect match for the Cardinals. He ended up signing with Miami for 1 year. He got $2 million more than what he was making in Tampa. But I thought he would have been a real plus in your bullpen because you're gonna need some experience out there. You're gonna need some guys who can get people out. But to your point, the shortage of right-handed power in the game is glaring. And mm-hmm. I was having this conversation with Ollie Marmol the other day, and I said we finally come to the point. For all those parents who want to make their kid a left-handed hitter and play shortstop and play center field, now we have a whole generation of just left-handed hitters, and the right-handers, well, they don't exist anymore. And I think the best example is in a healthy right-handed market, Pete Alonso would not have been able to make the money that he's going to make now since he's moved on to Baltimore. And how you fix that, I don't know. And we have a right-handed bat in Jordan Walker. We don't know what that power is going to look like from things that I've heard about his development in Jupiter. There's a noticeable difference in some things. Now, how does that translate to the season? Well, we'll have to wait and see. But, I think that the 26 team is going to have a look that I couldn't tell you what it's going to look like, but I expect it to be competitive because we do. I don't know whether you noticed, Matt, we have 162 games on the schedule.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Cardinals are just going to roll out a bunch of guys and say, well, this is just getting us through 20 to 27. I don't think you can look at it that way. You need to know what you have. You need to be competitive. You need to build a culture. And I think it starts in 26 and not 27.
You said a few things that I want to respond to. Let's start with Jordan Walker. And I like Jordan a lot, and I'm a big believer in those underlying numbers and that he's got the ability sitting there to just be a monster at the major league level. We're talking all-star every year kind of guy. Like that's in there, and the underlying numbers would tell you that's in there. He has been one of the single worst hitters in all of Major League Baseball over the last 2 years. And Claibs, last year around the winter warm-up, he showed up. He was looking great. He was saying all the right things. now we're hearing, you know, about the stuff about how he's, you know, the work he's doing down in Jupiter and how he's, you know, focusing more on, you know, agility because he felt like a statue sometimes. I hate this game of, okay, we're going to lift up the expectations on somebody. I just want to see. Like, I'm just with Walker at this point, I have zero expectations for the guy. I'm not even 100% convinced he's going to be on the roster. I'm also not 100% convinced that he might not have this remarkable step forward. I just, all this talk that we get in the offseason, sometimes it's a little bit much for me.
Well, that's what it is talk. Yeah. I think we have to have something to talk about. The numbers don't lie. He has not been as good as we expected him to be. Maybe the fact that maybe he shouldn't have been here in the first place at the stage he was introduced to the game. You know, you look back and you say, man, had he not seen so many fastballs early in spring training, who knows what he would look like. And, you know, once the season started and they started to throw him the breaking stuff and he really became off kilter and really is still trying to recover from that. Maybe the maturity factor has come into play also. But, you know, everybody looks good this time of the year. I mean, think about it, man. How many times have we been to spring training and we say, oh, that guy really looks good. He's lost some weight and everything. And, man, he's raking. Yeah, he's hitting fastballs that, you know, he knows is coming. You know, I don't think you really know what you have until you probably get to somewhere toward the end of April to know whether a person has really made a legitimate improvement. Because, you know, those first months of the season, especially spring training, and that's changed a little bit because we see a lot more pitchers who throw more breaking balls and they're throwing sweepers and they want to see what that looks like in spring training. Now, the good pitchers won't show it to the good hitters. They'll show it to somebody else. But with that said, you know, spring training used just to be a fastball pitching contest. And hitters would just try and get their swing down. Pitchers wanted to just see what the release looked like. And that's all you saw. Season rolls around, second week of April. All right, we're throwing changeups now. Here comes a curveball. Here's a sinker. Here's a slider. And all of a sudden, the hitters now have to adjust. So maybe that is accelerated a little bit more in spring training this year, so we'll have a better idea. But, and you know me, I don't put much stock in anything before Flag Day. I keep thinking it's going to be sooner than that, but I think I'll stay with that because I've been fooled too many times thinking a guy comes out of spring training red hot and all of a sudden, the next thing you know, he's over his last 22.
We probably put too much stock in the overall spring training numbers. We should really only be looking at maybe the final 2 weeks of spring training to maybe even give us a look. But here's the other side, and this goes along with the technology aspect of things. If you're a pitcher and you want to work on your sweeper, for lack of a better term, you can go back on the backfields, and they've got so much technology on that. You know exactly what the pitch shape is. You know what the spin rate is. You know the velocity. You know everything. There is value in letting hitters to tell you something. So I'm not saying you never throw it in a Grapefruit League game, but for the most part, guys can go on the backfields and they can know whether or not their pitches are where they need them to be based off the technology that goes along with it. And they don't have to show it as much in spring training games.
You know what I would also do? I'd get some minor leaguers on the backfield and throw it to them. So at least they'll have an idea on what to look for as they ascend within their own career. You know, you have nothing to lose. I mean, listen. You're going to be a big leaguer. There's some pitches that you're not going to see until you get to the big leagues. But if you have a guy who's a veteran who wants to work on something, I'd rather for him to work on it against the minor league guy so he could at least know what that looks like at some point in his career. But, you know, they haven't invited me to that meeting yet on how spring training is going to shake out, but they know where to find me.
I don't think it's a coincidence.
I'm here to help.
There you go. Well, I'm sure they know your number. I don't think it's a coincidence that more and more veteran pitchers are pitching in less and less Grapefruit League games and going more through simulated games on the backfields, and maybe they'll just get one or two starts right at the end of spring training. They don't want to show it. They want to be in a controlled environment. And we see that a little bit even during the season where there's going to be guys who would rather go hit in the cage inside in the tunnel as opposed to going outside for full batting practice. And we don't have the time right now to argue whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, but there is a level of control that athletes and baseball players want that you get by being on the backfields, by being in the tunnel, that you don't get when you're out on a big field.
And this has been going on forever. I remember Bob Gibson would never pitch. Well, the only time he would pitch in a spring training game against a National League team, he'd face the Mets. But he wouldn't face National League teams very often in spring training. You know, because back then, remember, there was no playoff system or there was no interleague play. So he wouldn't see American League team until the World Series. So guys have always done that or tried to reduce the opportunities to face guys that they're going to see 3 weeks, 4 weeks from now and see them, you know, a bunch of times during the season. But the structure has always been there. We've just altered it a little bit with regard to the options you now have in being able to get your work in and getting it done effectively. And then here's the other thing, Matt. We're so conscious of innings and on a pitcher's arm. Now, the arm doesn't know this game doesn't count, you know, but still in all, you still throw it. You're still using it. So you have to take that into account on how effective your pitches are going to be because they track every one you have, whether it's warming up, whether it's a bullpen, you name it. It's not something that, you know, you just take for granted. Oh, this game doesn't count, doesn't mean anything. Well, no, he's throwing fastball, okay? He's throwing a slider. He's throwing a changeup. I mean, these pitches, they may not be documented to the point of effectiveness, but they still are documented because you threw it. And that's how you have to take into account on making sure you use these guys as effectively as you can.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. You are listening to the Day After Christmas edition of the Gas House Gang. We're back with more in just a moment on KMOX. Alongside of Mike Claiborne, I'm Matt Pauly. You are locked into the Gas House Gang being brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. Great to have you with us. We hope that your Christmas tree is well. A lot of people off work today, maybe hitting the return lines on this day after Christmas.
Do you do that? Oh, you're a return
the day?
Guy? Yeah.
Return stuff.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want to say I'm a Grinch, but I don't really pay too much attention to this Christmas thing, man. You know, you don't have to give me a gift. I'm good. And so, don't expect one from me because I just, you know, it is what it is.
Fair enough. So you're somebody that if something you've got just doesn't work or it's not right, that's just the gamble and you're probably not going to go stand in line to return it?
Oh, hell no. No, it's not, okay. I don't do lines. And, you know, on the whole gift thing, if you want it, don't let a day on the calendar inspire you to do it then. If you want it, go get it. You know, fortunately for me, from a size standpoint and a fit, I'm pretty good about that. So I don't really have very many reasons to return stuff. And when someone does give me something, it's something that I can probably navigate. So I'm not. No, you won't see me in the mall with a box trying to return it. That's okay. Not me. Amazon might come get it, but I'm not going to take it anywhere. That's for sure.
My wife will do the thing where she'll get two sizes of something. Hmm. And so she's guaranteed, especially for ordering it or for getting something at a place where there's not really a chance to do like a fitting room, you get two sizes and then you go home and you try them on and then you return the one that did not fit. So we spend a fair amount of time in return lines.
Yeah. I commend you.
That is not a criticism, by the way. Let the record show that I'm not being critical. Exactly. I am just stating a fact.
She might be listening, Matt. So, yeah,
she might
exactly.
be. She might be.
So you might. You know what? Hey, how about those Cardinals, man? How about let's get back to the gas house before Matt gets put out?
No kidding.
Or the basement door is locked and he can't come back upstairs.
Might be on your couch tonight.
You're more than welcome, man.
Appreciate that. The starting pitching thing, and we talked about this a little bit on the countdown show this past week. I'm so confused is the wrong word, but I'm intrigued. I go intrigued because there's talk about still adding another starting pitcher. That's something that Heim very much said in his last media session. It sounds like in a perfect world, there'd still be a kind of a veteran innings eater guy that they could join. Right now, you for sure in the rotation, you have Dustin May, Matthew Liberatore, Michael McGreevy, and I think Dobbins is in the for sure group as well, unless he comes in not healthy. So that's four guys. And then You got Richard Fitz, who I'm sure they would like to have in the rotation after they traded for him. They've talked so positively about Kyle Leahy and his transition into being a starter. We haven't even mentioned Andre Pallante, and it feels like every single time something happens, Pallante gets pushed further and further out from the rotation. And then even the idea of Quinn Matthews having the opportunity to come into spring and compete for a job. I know the adage is you can't have too much starting pitching, but at the same time, in a year where you would probably like to still give some opportunities to some young guys, it feels like some of those opportunities might not be as easy as you would like them to be.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think what they're trying to do more than anything else is develop legitimate competition. I'd like to see a front-end guy with a little bit more length to him in the front of the rotation, because I don't know if there's a number one, as we used to call him, in this current group of pitchers. Now, maybe there's the potential to be, but I'd like to see a guy who has a little bit more length to him that we know we can count on him compared to a coin flip on everybody else. The competition in spring training is going to be stiff, and I'm glad we're having it. I think there was some situations where we didn't have a choice but to run certain people out there, and the result was not one that we were positive with. So if you're going to do it, let's make sure that all these guys compete. And let's face it, Matt, we were lucky last year. We didn't have somebody go down with an injury. That's the other thing. You have to plan on the inevitable of that, having someone either go down or not perform to the level that you thought they were going to. How many times last year did we look around for guys who were on the scrap heap that came in to give us an inning or a start or whatever? And, you know, as soon as season's over, it was adios. I think you want a little bit more foundation with this next group of pitchers that you're trying to develop.
Yeah, part of the reason they didn't have injuries last year, not all, some of it was just they did a really good job of managing the health, and I'm not trying to be dismissive of that whatsoever. But if you throw hard, if you have a lot of spin rate on your pitches, you are more likely to get injured. Cardinals want more of that.
That's why they're loading up on pitchers, because they won't swing and miss guys.
Right, so those are the guys who typically get injured. So I don't, and you brought in a guy like Dustin May who has an injury history. The extreme likelihood is that you are going to deal with significantly more injuries in the rotation. I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love for them to go through another year like they just went through, where the health is there. But you can't really expect that to happen. But I would also argue, Klaibs, and I'm not trying to be like a homer here, and I'm not trying to be a hot take guy or any of that, but with the lack of production that the team got last year from Miles Michaelis, Eric Fetty, and Andre Pallante, you might not have a top-end starter anymore like you had with Sonny Gray, but this group of guys that I just mentioned, I think from top to bottom, gives you more. You don't... I like the idea of this rotation more than the rotation that included some of those guys.
I would agree. And I haven't even seen some of these guys pitch. But I look at Dustin May. I tell you who he kind of reminds me of? Michael Wacha at a stage of his career. You remember Wacha came on, it was, you know, very well thought of. And then he started to have these unique injuries. And once he got that behind him, he became a very serviceable pitcher who's still doing a good job in Kansas City. If you can get that kind of performance out of May for 1 year, and if you like him a lot, maybe you extend him. Now, when I say extend, that doesn't mean you go out and give him a 4-year deal, because we've seen how that didn't work. I think that, you know, if you can get a couple of guys like that who can have good years to build on and not necessarily be maxed out innings-wise, and I think the Dodgers kind of showed everybody that if you have enough pitching, you can spread it out over the course of the season and not be in a position where when you get to postseason, you know, you're saying this guy's way over his innings limit. I think you might want to go in that direction. And so with that comes the competition that we'll see starting in spring training, and we'll see guys up and down in the rotation. Some guys have options, some guys don't, and you got to make some tough decisions there. But I agree with you. I like what I see on paper better than what I read on paper last season.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I don't know what it looks like for a team without the payroll of the Dodgers to try to kind of do what the Dodgers did with pitching. I mean, the Dodgers' payroll tax, just the tax, what they paid out, was more than what I think 11 teams had as their entire major league salary. It's incredible. So they're the team that's able to go out there and just stockpile pitching that basically you don't use all season and then bring it back around. A lot of times you look at the great teams and you try to emulate them. I'm not sure how a team that doesn't have the financial resources of the Dodgers tries to emulate what they do from a pitching perspective.
Well, and the other thing they had working for them, they were in a division that basically they had locked up before the season started. So they had some wiggle room in knowing that they were going to be in postseason. If they basically showed up, threw some gloves and bats on the field, they had a good chance to get in. I think the Cardinals situation is going to be different because they're going to have to fight for everything. You know, this division that we're in, who everybody poo-poos, you know, we saw what Milwaukee's done the last couple of years. Chicago improved. Cincinnati improved. Pittsburgh is trying to make some noise. Yeah. And the Cardinals are obviously trying to find their way. Now, they may not have the lofty 100-plus win record, but I think teams that play them, any of these teams in the division are going to say, hey, you know what, that's a pretty good team. And so once you get into that mix, you're going to have to find innings from people that you're going to count on, unlike the Dodgers, is just say, you just sit over there on the side. We'll let you know when it's time to pitch. We're going to need all hands on deck.
You mentioned Pittsburgh. I wouldn't be shocked. At some point this offseason, Vegas will come out with the win totals, like the over-under for wins for every team in baseball. I wouldn't be surprised if the Cardinals have the lowest win total in the NL Central just because Pittsburgh has made a little bit of noise. Now, I don't think they're going to be a last-place team next year, but I could see Vegas putting them as the team with the least win total of going into the year.
Well, I think because everything is still a question mark on who's going to do what.
Yeah.
Throw in the fact that we don't have that right-handed punch from a batting standpoint. A revamped pitching staff is something that we haven't seen before. And you know what's the Brendan Donovan situation going to look like? And what do you if you move him, what are you getting in return? What does it look like without Nolan Arenado? So I think there's so many ifs and question marks for Vegas at this point to say we don't know who they are. So we'll put them here, and then maybe they'll play up to a better expectation.
That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. We're going to take one more break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about the Christmas Day action, both from a football and basketball standpoint. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. It's the Gas House Gang right here on KMOX. That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. Just a few minutes left on this edition of the Gas House Gang. You know, Claibs, we are now into our 101st year of broadcasting here at KMOX, now that our 100th anniversary has officially come and gone on New Year's Eve, and Christmas Eve. We encourage everybody to check out a website that we've put together. It's really, really cool. KMOX100.com. That's KMOX100.com. You can hear the audio from our 100th anniversary special that went all day. You can learn all about the various KMOX pioneers. You can see classic photos, all kinds of things. It's really a great website.
I'm looking forward to it. Being part of KMOX since 1981, I've seen a few things. Most of them good. So I'm anxious to see what this looks like. I have a story or two along the way, but
just a few.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, most of my I have a few. Yes, I do. So I'm looking forward to it.
Has anyone approached you about a book?
Yeah, I've had a couple of people talk to me about it. I wouldn't know where to start, to be honest with you, because of the business of being here at KMOX and being part of the all sports format when it first started, and now in the digital business as well, and the TV stuff that I've done, and meeting all the people over the years, I would be interested in doing it. I wouldn't know where to start.
I'm blessed to get to spend a fair amount of time with you, so I hear a lot of your stories. I think you should do a book. There's a lot of those stories that you have, and a lot of them are connected to Mike Shannon, but stories that you don't want to see not be out there. So I would, for whatever it's worth, Matt Pauly's opinion, Mike Claiborne should do a book.
Well, if we can get somebody to write it, I'm all in.
All right.
I'm all
in.
So
anybody listening, if you want to do a book with Claibs, that's out there for sure. Yesterday, the Chiefs played again. It's just it's kind of sad to see what they
it is what it is, man.
Patrick Mahomes, yeah.
It happens to every good team. I mean, they were saying the same thing about the New England Patriots about 10 years ago when they started to fall off. So, you know, it's really, it's it's the punishment for success, because you know, after a while, you know, you draft late every year, your budget goes to a handful of players, you can't develop players quick enough to be able to step right in and help, and once your offensive line goes to hell, then it's over. And you know, I know they're going to move to Kansas, but I can tell you this, that'll be a whole different looking team when they open up that stadium in Kansas. Mahomes and all those guys will be coming out there on walkers or whatever, because they won't be playing at that point. And it's unfortunate, but you know, every good organization goes through this. I mean, it's part, and you pick the sport. Every organization has great success, has that bump in the road, and you know what? I didn't include the Cardinals in that. You know, when you've been successful for so many years, at some point, the talent level eludes you. You know, you have some injuries, you have some other things where people get old quick. And, you know, the old adage, you know, you always want to try and move a guy the year before he really should move him. And, you know, you fall in love with guys to a point where you feel like we can squeeze one more out of them. It never works. I mean, so it's been a great run. I'm happy for what they've been able to do and what they've done for the state of Missouri. But you know what? You know, we'll be talking about them down the road, somewhere down the road, but it won't be in the near future.
I don't know what to make of this. I don't think I should make anything of it, but Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk had tweeted out about an hour ago. He said, the Chiefs' preliminary agreement to move to Kansas has been posted online. Here's one clear takeaway. It's far from final and hinges on NFL approval, which gives Missouri an opening to craft a superior offer to keep the team at Arrowhead Stadium. They're not creating it. Like, that is, if I was a resident of Kansas, I would be pretty upset about that deal. What they are giving the Chiefs is crazy. I don't, as much as I want the Chiefs to stay in Missouri, I don't know what a superior deal would look like, because that is just craziness.
It's the NFL holding people hostage again. And here's how I look at this. If you want this facility, there should be three investors. The team's got to throw money in it. The league should throw money in it. And the state and local government should throw money in it. And they should all share with it equally. Each one of them should throw a third in. Because they're the ones that's going to profit off of it. You and me and everybody else, we're not profiting off of it other than going to the games. So for the ones that are going to make money, reinvest in your product. And the league and the league loves to play this game. They have their own guys internally that float those sort of stories out there. Said, okay, you know, it's not done yet. We haven't signed anything. If you can sweeten the pot a little bit. No, we've already gone through that. If you want to go to Kansas, then go. And I can guarantee you in 15 years, the people in Kansas will be saying, what in the hell did we get ourselves into? Because we're not going to realize one dime of what we thought we were going to raise. And if you don't believe, believe me, come to St. Louis and ask us how that turned out.
100%. And all of a sudden the streets have more potholes and there's less cops.
Exactly.
And there's less lights and all this, like 1% of the GDP of Kansas is going to go to the Chiefs. It's a ridiculous number, which they cannot stick with for sure. Klabes, always enjoy this. I know
right.
It was not a Christmas where you jump into the holiday spirit, but I was glad to spend the day after Christmas with you.
I got to tell you, man, with everything I've gone through over the last week or so, this is the best Christmas I could ever have. Trust me.
Fair enough. That's Mike Claiborne. I'm Matt Pauly. A programming note for you. I'm going to be back with you during the 5 o'clock hour later on today. It's going to be me and Bernie Miklas for Rush Hour Sports. So that's going to be coming up later on today. We've got Dave Glover's show coming up next. I believe it's Rennie Knott who's going to be hosting
Rennie
today.
And myself, and who knows who's going to show up in here today.
Awesome. So Rennie and Clay
Cast
for the Dave Glover Show. You do not want to miss that. That's all going to be coming up. I'll talk to you again in a few hours for the Rush Hour, for Rush Hour Sports. You've been locked in to the Gas House Gang on KMOX.